Charles Spurgeon, Part 5.
But the cry used to be that our ministers were hardly done by. They were to be pampered and laid by, done up in velvet, and only to be brought out to do a little work occasionally, and then to be pitted when that work was done. I do not hear anything of that talk nowadays. I meet with my brethren in the ministry who are able to preach day after day, and are not half so fatigued as they were, and I saw a brother minister this week who has been having meetings in his church every day, and the people have been so earnest that they will keep him very often from 6 o'clock in the evening to 2 in the morning. The most extraordinary ministers of any time have been most extraordinary sinners before conversion. These great sinners are not a whit behind those who have been trained under pious influences, and so have been brought into the church. Man has a free will, and God does not violate it, but the free will is sweetly bound with fetters of the divine love, till it becomes more free than it ever was before. I know this, if the Lord willed it, there is no man so desperately wicked here this morning that he would not be made now to seek for mercy, however infidel he might be, however rooted in his prejudices against the gospel. Jehovah hath but to will it, and it is done. Into thy dark heart, O thou who hast never seen the light, would the light stream, if he did but say, "Let there be light," there would be light. Thou mayest bend thy fist and lift up thy mouth against Jehovah, but he is thy master, yet thy master to destroy thee, if thou goest on in thy wickedness, but thy master to save thee now, to change thy heart and turn thy will, as he turneth the rivers of water. While you make your efforts, trust not in your efforts, but in the Lord Jehovah. The duty of the church is not to be measured by her success. Know ye not of old that when the sons of God saw the daughters of men that they were fair, and they were joined unto them, then the flood came and swept them all away? Those who are unspiritual care nothing for truth or grace, they look to finances, and numbers, and respectability. Utterly carnal men care for none of these things, and so long as the political aims of dissenters are progressing, and there is an advance in social position, it is enough for them. But men whose spirits are of God would sooner see the faithful persecuted than see them desert the truth, sooner see churches in the depths of poverty full of holy zeal than rich churches dead in worldliness. When the pure gospel is not preached, God's people are robbed of the strength which they need in their life journey. Come, my brother, we see around us this and that to discourage us. Let us, like David, encourage ourselves in the Lord our God. When your face is blurred with tears, your eyes red with weeping, and your heart heavy with sorrow for sin, the great Father is rejoicing over you. The prodigal son wept in his father's bosom, but the father rejoiced over his son. We are questioning, doubting, sorrowing, trembling, and all the while he who sees the end from the beginning knows what will come out of the present disquietude, and therefore rejoices. Any man can sing when his cup is full of delights. The believer alone has songs when waters of a bitter cup are wrung out to him. Any sparrow can chirp in the daylight. It is only the nightingale that can sing in the dark. Children of God, whenever the enemies seem to prevail over you, whenever the serried ranks of the foe appear sure of victory, then begin to sing. Your victory will come with your song. It is a very puzzling thing to the devil to hear saints sing when he sets his foot on them. He cannot make it out. The more he oppresses them, the more they rejoice. Brethren, it is a splendid thing to be quite alone in the warfare of the Lord. Suppose we had half a dozen with us. 6 men are not much increased to strength, and possibly they may be a cause of weakness, by needing to be looked after. If you are quite alone, so much the better, there is the more room for God. When desertions have cleaned the place out, and left you no friend, now every corner can be filled with deity. The next duty is fearlessness. Fear thou not. What? not a little? No, fear thou not. But surely I may show some measure of trembling? No, fear thou not. Tie that knot tight about the throat of unbelief. Fear thou not, neither this day, nor any day of thy life. When fear comes in, drive it away, give it no space. Since the adversaries are busy, let us be busy also. If they think they shall make a full end of us, let us resolve to make a full end of their falsehoods and delusions. I think every Christian man should answer the challenge of the adversaries of Christ by working double tides, by giving more of his substance to the cause of God, by living more for the glory of God, by being more exact in his obedience, more earnest in his efforts, and more importunate in his prayers. But the truth is as plain as a pikestaff, legible as though it were written on the broad heavens, and so simple that a babe may comprehend it. With his stripes we are healed. Beneath a glorious sky, where stars peer down upon us like the eyes of God. If we think we are better than that, we do not know ourselves. It is a part of the infatuation of evil that its victims pride themselves upon their excellence. Our infernal pride makes us cover our leprous foreheads with the silver veil of self-deception. Like a foul bog covered over with greenest moss, our nature hides its rottenness beneath a film of supposition's righteousness. And, brethren, while sin is loathsome before God at the present time, it will lead to the most deadly result in due season. There is not a man or woman among us that can escape the damnation of hell apart from the healing virtue of the Savior's atoning sacrifice. When ignorance is known and felt, it is not dense, but he who knows nothing, and yet fancies that he knows everything, is ignorant indeed. Probably most men would prefer to die rather than to be scourged after the Roman fashion, and might be wise in making such a choice. Sinews of oxen. Were intertwisted with knuckle bones of sheep, and these were armed with small slivers of bone, so that every stroke gashed the flesh deeply, and caused fearful wounds and tearings, as saith the prophet, the plowers made deep furrows. When he was here on earth, if he saw men sin, that smote him, if he heard them speak a wrong word, that smote him, having sinned, we have been hardened by sin. But he was pure and perfect, and it was a bruise to him to come into contact with sin. You know how his adversaries called him a drunken man and a winebibber, how they said he had a devil and was mad. Thus they were all striking him, each man laying on his blow with all his might. Worse than all, he was wounded in the house of his friends. Was any blow equal to that which Judas lay upon those shoulders? And next to that, could anything surpass in pain the blows which Peter gave when he said, I know not the man. He is so fair, that nothing else is beautiful to any eye that has once gazed upon him, and yet they spit in his face and mar his lovely countenance with cruel blows of fatal fists. He is all tenderness, but they are all cruelty. He is harmless as a lamb, he never thought nor spoke a thing of wrong to mortal man. But yet they strike him as though he were a fierce beast of prey, fit only to be bruised to death. He is all love, and, when they smite him worst, he doth but pray for them, yet smite they still. No curses drop from those dear lips, but words of pity only, and of sweet intercession, follow each blow, yet still they wound and buffet, and blaspheme. Oh, grief, far deeper than the sea! Oh, woe immeasurable! They smite him, for whom they ought to have gladly died, him, for whom the noble army of martyrs counted it all joy to render up their lives. They despitefully entreat him, who came on errands of pure mercy and disinterested grace. Oh, cruel whips and cruel hands, and yet more cruel hearts, of wicked men! Men have tried to overcome their passions by the contemplation of death, but they have failed to bury sin in the grave. They have striven to subdue the rage of lust within their nature by meditating upon hell, but that has only rendered the heart hard and callous to love's appeals. He who once believingly beholds the mystery of Christ suffering for him, shakes of the viper of sin into the fire, which consumed the great sacrifice. The cross. The cross. The cross of Christ. What power dwells in it? Full sure, if even for Satan that cross had been set up on earth, it would have lifted him from hell to heaven. But it is not for him, it is, however, for the vilest of the sons of men, and there are no sons of men so corrupt that the cross of Christ cannot purge them of all evil. Do not tell me that we ought mainly to preach Christ exalted. I will preach my Lord upon the throne and delight therein, but the great remedy for ruined manhood is not Christ in glory, but Christ ill shame and death.